Chapter 12. The third day is for Lily to learn about the next world. When I sit next to her casket, I keep going over everything I know about Jamie's identity and the reason he's here. What I know for sure about Jamie: he used to be a figure skater. What I know for sure about why he's here: two undercover cops are in the Sioux working on a case. One is posing as a high school science teacher. The other is pretending to be a high school senior and a hockey player on a junior A team. What else I know for sure? Lily shouldn't be here. Jamie and his uncle show up at the funeral home. When Jamie asks to speak with me outside, I'm both curious and irritated. I follow them to a nearby bridge over the power canal. Ron Johnson, or whatever his real name is, looks a few years older than my mom. He has a barely there mustache I recognize in native guys whose facial hairs present as lone wolves determined not to get too close to one another. He is smack dab in the middle of the acceptable Anishinaabe skin tone continuum. I'd bet my trust fund no one has ever told him, "Oh, you're Indian? You sure don't look like one." "Ron Johnson," he says, shaking my hand. "Senior agent with the Federal Bureau of Investigation." "For real? Ron Johnson?" I scoff. It's better not to provide actual names at this point. "Aye, aye, Jamie." "Let me guess. Jamie Johnson?" "For your protection, Donis," Jamie says. "But I really am a law enforcement officer on loan from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The FBI and BIA. Two federal agencies that tend to make things worse instead of better for tribes." Ron asks, "Would it be possible for you to come with us so we could talk with you about the investigation?" I wanted this. Answers. Truth. But how can I leave Lily now? The purpose of the third day is suddenly clear: to gain new ways. Just as Lily is finding her way now, there's a new world for me to learn. Lily would want me to do this. "I'll let my aunt know I'm leaving with you," I say. We pass the movie theater downtown on our drive from the funeral home to wherever Ron is taking me. Denzel Washington in The Manchurian Candidate and Hilary Duff in A Cinderella Story. "Oh, look," I point out, "two movies about people faking identities." Since Ron and Jamie have yet to say anything, I decide not to be the naive girl who accepts half-assed stories. The corner of Ron's mouth twitches. In the back seat, Jamie pinches the bridge of his nose. "Fake identities are necessary for protection," Ron says. "An operative's cover is a shield with two sides, to protect the people he comes in contact with, as well as the agent." He turns left at the corner with the Dairy Queen, toward the middle school and high school. I remember standing in a snowstorm with Lily last April when DQ opened for the season. I ordered my usual Buster bar, and she got a blizzard with goofy combinations of stuff in it. A few minutes ago, I was sitting next to Lily, racking my brain about how little I know about Jamie's true identity and whatever this investigation is. Now, I'm in a car with Jamie and Ron, but all I can think about is Lily. It's as if Jamie and his investigation are lodged in my brain's left hemisphere with the facts, logic, and analysis. Lily is in my right brain, part of my imagination, intuition, and feelings. Between the two hemispheres is a divide as deep and wide as the Grand Canyon. I force myself to pay attention to Ron, who's mentioning other cases he's worked on. "My last investigation involved the BIA, local tribal police, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. High-profile case. It was over 25 years old, but last year we identified the people who murdered a Native woman. Her family got answers." He pulls into the high school parking lot and turns to face me. "Answers can't bring a person back, but a successful investigation can help loved ones grieve and carry on." I feel his words sink in as we get out of the car. Is that something I can do? Help Lily's family now, because I couldn't help her Saturday evening on Sugar Island? It feels strange to walk back into the high school. Surreal. As if I was here only yesterday. And in the next step, as if I've been gone for years instead of months. When we pass the front office, the school secretary comes out with her arms widening for a hug. Donis, I'm so sorry to hear about Lily Chippaway, Mrs. Hammond says, embracing me. And after what you've already gone through, first that terrible business with your uncle, and then your grandmother's stroke. Mrs. H releases me. I remain in place. Grandma Pearl's warning rings through my head. Lily's murder was the third bad thing. I was supposed to be on guard, watch for signs, but I didn't stop it. I failed Lily. She's gone, and I was supposed to protect her. Hi, Mrs. Hammond. I'm Ron Johnson, Ron says as he steps forward to shake her hand. We spoke on the phone earlier. Oh, yes, Mrs. H looks at Ron. You must be the new Indian science teacher.
I am the new science teacher, and yes, I am Native American, Ron says amiably. Ron Johnson, this is my nephew, Jamie. He and Donis are friends. Jamie's on the Superior's team with her brother, Levi.
Okay, then, her voice brightens. Any friend of theirs should do well here. Jamie asks, Ma'am, is there a vending machine nearby? We need something to drink. Mrs. H gives directions before chatting with Ron about the upcoming district-wide pre-service conference for all faculty. My mother won't be there this year. She is taking an indefinite leave of absence to take care of Grand Mary. The surreal part is that Ron sounds like any other new teacher having an ordinary conversation with someone. It's like an iceberg, a minuscule amount of blah-blah chit-chat above the surface, while deep below is a giant mass of secret info. Jamie returns a minute later with a bottle of water, which he opens and hands to me. Thank you. I take a sip before holding the cool plastic to my sweaty forehead. Jamie stays at my side, an echo of all the mornings we ran together. I remind myself that easy comfort wasn't real. It was manufactured as part of an undercover assignment. I move away from Jamie and walk over to Ron. I remain next to him when he heads down the dimly lit hallway, the linoleum amplifying the squeak of Ron's shoe each time his right heel lands. It's the opposite of stealth. I suppress a giggle that comes from nowhere and tickles like pop rocks fizzing against the roof of my mouth. Is it normal for my emotions to go all over the place? Debilitating grief one instant, and giddy hilarity in the next, and sometimes abandon me completely. When we reach Uncle David's old classroom, the funny moment leaves as quickly as it arrived. Turning on the lights, Ron motions for me to sit at my uncle's vintage steel desk at the front of the room. He sits next to me on the stool at the lab workstation. Jamie remains in the doorway, neither in nor out. He watches me. I used to sit at this desk every day after school. Uncle David kept snacks in the bottom drawer. I open it, hoping to see protein bars and bags of trail mix covering the false bottom he once showed me. But Ron has already filled the deep drawer with file folders and textbooks. Why are we here? I ask as my legs begin to shake. I haven't been back here since I collected Uncle David's personal items after his death, and right now, the persisting sadness compounded with my fresh grief over Lily is almost too much to bear. Jamie and I are part of an investigation involving multiple agencies, federal and Canadian. There's been a significant increase in drug trafficking throughout the region, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Ontario. Ron is calm and matter-of-fact, but he missed the point of my question. I'd meant here, in Uncle David's classroom. Okay, then why is he here? My lips point in Jamie's direction. On the hockey team, I clarify, so Ron won't explain that Jamie is standing guard and listening for any sounds in the empty school. The substance we're most interested in is methamphetamine, Ron says. Meth. A prickly chill travels up my spine. Lily on her back, arms outstretched. Her fall reverses, as if I'm rewinding her final moments in my head. She is upright, eyes open, startled. The bullet leaves her chest and is back in Travis's gun. The reverse action speeds up. Travis showing up at the powwow, back at the ice rink, years unhappen. When it halts, Travis is a chubby boy who burps the alphabet and makes Lily laugh until milk sprays from her nose. There's a pattern of distribution, Ron says. Similar batches of meth show up in hockey towns and on reservations in the Great Lakes area. We're trying to identify the manufacturers, the ones cooking it. Travis. In eighth grade, Travis and I walked together every day from the middle school to Sioux High for chemistry. When we became official high school students, we took every advanced placement science class together. Biology, physics, earth science, and physical science. Uncle David advocated for kids like us who tested out of the standard classes at the school. My legs bounced dramatically. The prickly chill is itchy now, too. You think the person making the meth is from the Sioux? I look from Ron to Jamie, who is still observing me from the doorway. How do you narrow it down? My aunt goes to Indian health meetings in Minnesota. Meth isn't just here, it's everywhere. We identified hallucinogenic additives in samples of the methamphetamine, Ron explains. Mushrooms, psilocybe serolepis, from near Tequimenon Falls. I do a double take at Ron, at his ease in speaking the language of scientific classifications. He shrugs. Undergraduate degree in chemistry. The other part of what he said registers with me. Tequimenon Falls is only 70 miles away. Auntie and Art got married there, alongside the larger upper waterfall. As I struggle to keep up with what Ron's telling me, I feel Jamie's eyes on me, continuing his silent assessment. Ron keeps talking. Another batch included a variety of Pluteus from Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. Our tribal youth council went to a youth powwow there. Every tribe in Michigan had their tribal youth groups represented. Lily made me dance the two-step special with a guy from downstate. Go on! It's a chance to kiss a Anishinaab you're not related to. There was another sample that had a mushroom from the southern end of Sugar Island. Travis came from a large family that has always had family members on tribal council and were hired into the few good-paying tribal government jobs during the lean years. Practically, the entire eastern half of the island is owned either by the tribe or by the Flint family. Ron and Jamie clearly suspect that Travis was the person cooking the meth that the FBI is interested in. But he did his deep dive into meth over last winter break, and meth has been a problem since long before Christmas, so who else could have been involved? I inhale deeply. This classroom smells different from other ones. I don't know if it's the actual scent or just the memory of countless experiments. Bunsen burner, gas flames, sulfur. Okay, but you haven't explained why we're here, in my uncle's classroom, I ask. But even as the words leave my mouth, my leg stops bouncing. Every part of me goes numb. Why did they bring me to this room I know so well to talk about the investigation? Uncle David didn't show up for dinner on Easter Sunday. No one could reach him. Grand Mary immediately suspected he relapsed and was on a bender. Mom didn't believe it. I would have sided with my mother if not for the fact that Uncle David had been acting strange for weeks, no, months, before he went missing. Someone found his car 2 weeks later on a seasonal private road near the county line. A fifth of bourbon next to him. The toxicology report came back a month later, and the gossips had a field day. David Fontaine, the chemistry teacher, had died from a meth overdose. I know why we are here. You think my Uncle David was manufacturing meth? I try sounding indignant, but there's no heat in my words. Ron's jaw drops. He takes a minute to recover. No, Donis. Your uncle was helping us. He was a CI, a confidential informant. I gape at Ron in absolute shock. His death was suspicious, he says. David thought someone he knew was manufacturing meth, a student. He refused to provide names or evidence until he knew for certain. After his body was found and the toxicology reports came back, the FBI greenlighted a UC, undercover operation. Oh my God. Hiding my face in my hands, I cry tears of shame. Mom was right. She had faith in her brother and never wavered. I believed the worst. My uncle didn't fail me. I failed him. I sob until my palms are slick with snot, not caring if Ron or Jamie is uncomfortable. When I lower my hands, Ron has placed a box of tissues in front of me. I blow my nose and wipe my eyes and hands. Tell me more about the investigation.
I need to know everything now.
Last February, a group of kids got really sick, Ron says, on a reservation in northern Minnesota, a few days after a Superiors hockey tournament in Minneapolis. The kids couldn't eat or sleep. They just wanted more meth. And it wasn't that they hallucinated. Those kids had group hallucinations. Something about that batch was different. We call it Meth X. Uncle David was trying to help the Nish kids. I'm so sorry, Uncle. Ron continues. We're focusing on distribution. From there, we can backtrack to the manufacturers. We think Travis Flint was one of the students David Fontaine was concerned about. His expression softens. Donis, you were a person of interest as well. Seriously? Me? Wait, are they going to arrest me? I sit back in my chair. Hear me out. Ron puts his hands up like, be calm. The person cooking the meth has been experimenting with batches, adding different things, hallucinogenic mushrooms mostly. We think there's a cultural connection. It's highly likely the person is Ojibwe and familiar with plants in the area. You thought that I made the meth that killed my uncle? Jamie clears his throat. Donis, we read about your science fair project. Junior year, honorable mention in the state competition. You should have won, by the way. Wait, what? How long has this investigation been going on? I feel prickles on the back of my neck. He continues. You showed that traditionally prepared chokecherry pudding had cancer-fighting properties. The seeds, grinding up the seeds in the traditional way instead of filtering them out, that's what had the medicinal value. You know science, and you know your culture. How dare Jamie, of all people, suspect me of being a secret meth creator? A secret anything? I'm not the person pretending to be someone else. My voice drips with acid. You did win, by the way. Top honors in guy lies. No contest, you fake son of a... Ron cuts in. Donis, we know you're not involved. He rises and takes a half step closer. You have the means and opportunity, but no motive. With your trust fund, there's no financial incentive for you to risk so much. And while you're extremely competitive, you don't seek the limelight, so you're not motivated by ego. Ron meets my stunned expression with a shrug. Master's degree in psychology. Then why bring me here and tell me all this? They've brought me to Uncle David's classroom, told me about the investigation, made a connection between Travis and the meth showing up in hockey towns and on reservations. The meth that turned Travis into a shaking addict who murdered Lily. The meth that was cooked with something that might be connected to Ojibwe culture. The meth that my uncle was investigating as a confidential informant. You know science, and you know your culture. Jamie's voice echoes. You want me to take my uncle's place in the investigation? Yes, Ron says.